The Bulldogs Extra podcast is brought to you by Zaxby's. Cure your craving. Stop in today or visit Zaxby's.com.
From between the hedges at Sanford Stadium to the practice fields, from Stegman Coliseum and wherever else the Bulldogs are playing, it's time to talk Georgia sports.
Touchdown, Dogs win it!
From the Athens Banner Herald, here are your hosts, Mark Weiser and Ryan Dennis.
Hey, we're winding down yet another game week. Mark Weiser, UGA beat writer for the Athens Banner Herald, with Ryan Dennis, sports editor of the Banner Herald, and Arkansas State is coming to town on Saturday for a noon kickoff. Ryan, are you going to be put out a statement about your unhappiness with that noon kick like Alabama did?
No, I just whine about it, boo, and all that type of stuff. Write a long column about how there should never be a noon game. I guess it does affect them more as a central time, but I mean, it's pretty standard by now, isn't it?
Hey, I'm good with noon kickoffs.
You know, I love them, yeah.
Get home, watch some football at night, and look, I get it if you're sitting out in the sun, but we get a little bit of cover there in the press box. If you want to, you know, come join us if you want. I mean, I don't know if the Claude Felton and Company will give you a press credential, but by the way, good reviews from what I've seen about the new water bottle policy and the filling stations. I heard it went over well.
I hadn't heard. I mean, I was actually looking for those as I walked up through the stands the other day, actually wishing I had a bottle or two as I was going up and down the steps at a steamy Sanford Stadium. But what have you heard? What have people said? They
fast moving, you know, easy to get to, nice. Necessary.
20-ounce bottle, right? Is that the
factory sealed? All right.
Yeah. Gotta have that seal on it. Definitely.
All right. We're kind of burying the lead here. Yeah, we have a special guest joining us today.
So excited.
Big Georgia fan. He's got a concert coming up soon in Atlanta. Mike Mills from REM will join us to talk sports, music, and probably most important on this podcast, the Bulldogs, although talking REM is a good deal too.
There's nothing more Athens, I don't feel like, than Mike Mills talking REM and Georgia football. I mean, gosh, that is the supreme. That's what you think of when you think of Athens right there.
All right, so stay tuned on the podcast episode for that coming soon, and then we'll have picks coming up and our over-under near the end as well. We mentioned talk this week about Notre Dame was not being embraced by Kirby Smart. Ryan, have you heard more about Notre Dame or Arkansas State this week?
From within, without, outside the program? I mean, nothing within.
Just in all walks of life. When you do your jog, when you hit up your establishment, food establishment, when you talk to the people.
Well, when there's stories that pop out from you and others about stadium seating added to the stadium for the Notre Dame game, not the Arkansas State game. So, yeah, I mean, there's much more excitement. I know that people thinking ahead to Notre Dame, but not from Kirby Smart, by golly, Kirby Smart.
I'm not going to mention names because they're not fine sponsors of our program like Zaxby's.
Correct. Yeah,
but I have seen a couple of billboards around town with a real estate agent, and he's saying "Beat Notre Dame." So, if I'm Arkansas State, I'm probably taking a picture of that billboard and putting it up in the.
I bet the legions of Arkansas State fans around Athens are sending that back to them, and they're just furious.
But they're going to file in on Friday, I'm sure. you mentioned about the changes coming to the stadium for next week's game against Notre Dame. Georgia adding 500 seats in temporary bleachers in the west end zone. Looked up earlier today, this morning, tickets on StubHub were pushing $300.
That was low, I thought.
I don't know how much service fees they put on top of that. Yeah. Maybe when you include that in, it gets popped up a lot. And this is just to get in.
Yeah.
You know,
okay, so upper 600.
And I don't know if there's two available at that price in the next one. I didn't do extensive research. I just looked at the lowest.
Well, I was thinking that I just figured there'd be only a couple left out there, and they'd be wanting 1,200 for them,
right,
or something crazy.
So I looked up today. Georgia's got the fifth largest stadium in the SEC, and I did look at the national list. I guess if you're fifth largest in the SEC, you're probably top 10 nationally. You know, what do you got? You got Michigan, you got Penn State. I don't know who else has bigger than, you know, 90 plus. Texas, maybe.
Yeah,
Oklahoma.
Texas.
I don't think Oklahoma's that big. I don't know.
I've been in there before. It's not as big.
No. Right. Do they need to kind of put another 2,000 seats in there? Do they need to do it like 100,000 plus like these other four SEC schools, which is Texas A&M, Tennessee, Alabama, and someone else that I wrote about in my story. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've always contemplated this while looking up at that 600 section that they added, what, in 03, 04, somewhere like that. And why that didn't go all, I mean, I'm sure there's logistics with the East Campus Road over there and all, why they hadn't kept that going on around. You know, I'm sure that could add, God, that had probably 20,000 more seats. They kept that going around to where the skyboxes mm-hmm. are. You know, one thing I feel like I've heard discussed in the past is if they would ever, you know, block off the bridge mm-hmm. side. I hope they never do that because that just gives it a unique, distinct feel of Sanford Stadium and you kind of look out over the campus. And I hope they never would take out that scoreboard and whatnot and add seating there. But I have wondered why they haven't continued that upper 600 level on around, all the way around the skyboxes. Do you think that ever happened?
Well, I mean, I think the size that it is now is ideal for now. And look, the trend in college football is going the opposite direction. And if you look at the ticket scans for Georgia games, you know, it's not necessarily getting filled up as well, even for the biggest games. Now, you know, if it was flipped in these games that Georgia has coming in, like in 2027 through 2031, if you had Oklahoma, Texas, Clemson, Florida State UCLA, coming to Athens like in the next several years, yeah. or Bama, UCLA is not going to bring anyone though, and I mean that program
the,
now
the game itself would
program
bring,
now is
I'm not know, talking about them bringing anybody really
losing just to
Georgia fans showing up
Cincinnati, right? So I don't know. I don't think it needs to be done. I think you can bring in. I mean, I talked to Greg McGarrity, and he said they're not even planning to do it for Texas A&M. Now, look, you know, if something happens, if it goes over great, maybe they'll have a change of pace for that. Texas A&M's not bringing as many fans as Notre Dame. They have 5,000, I was told, in terms of their ticket allotment because that's what they do for their home games. So for right now, this will be a one-time thing. We'll see. All right, pretty quiet week on the team front. We'll say that Wednesday's practice was closed down to the media, so we if there was something that popped up Tuesday, we couldn't see it with our own eyes. Looked like Isaiah Wilson will not be playing this week. Why would he? I mean, you
that
got Notre
yep.
Dame next week, and I don't even know if his presumably he'd be, you know, maybe available off the ankle. Kyrus Jackson's out there practicing with a big club on his left hand after breaking it against Vandy. He caught a couple passes that we saw in practice, but Kirby says he's not going to be playing with the one hand.
Yeah,
kind of important with two.
I laughed at that comment yesterday. Yeah.
DJ Daniel, I don't know about him. Cornerback with the hamstring deal. Looked like he was limping a little bit Monday. Looked better on Tuesday. I'm going to guess also hold him out, use him for Notre Dame, or at least he's available.
I guess, I mean, Stevenson will probably get even more time this week, I guess, with DJ out. I don't know.
Perhaps. I mean, they're going to, you know, Arkansas State can challenge. They throw the ball around an awful lot, so we'll see how that works out. All right, you know what? Why don't we take a little break, and we'll be back with a pretty special guest. Don't forget to shoot us a review at the Apple Store or in the Google Podcast. Wait, is that it's not Apple Store? Ryan always reminds me. It's Apple
Podcast.
I guess
Apple Podcast.
Yeah. And does that change under? I think aren't they coming out with the new iPhone 11 now or something?
I don't know. All right. I'm still in the old ages.
We appreciate it. Thanks for tuning in each week. This is the Bulldogs Extra Podcast, presented by Zaxby's. All right, we are joined by a special guest in studio today, Mike Mills of REM fame, bassist, songwriter, keyboard and vocals, was a student at Georgia, and we wanted him on the podcast because he's a big sports fan, including the Georgia Bulldogs. Mike, thanks for being with us. We appreciate that.
I'm glad to be here.
All right, let me first fanboy a little. Long before I lived in Athens, I was introduced to REM in 1983 when y'all opened for a little band called The Police in Landover, Maryland.
Wow.
They were touring, I believe, then off an album called Murmur. And when I got to college, I remember on record release date going to pick up Document, Green, Out of Time, and immediately popping into, I guess it would have been my cassette player. I don't know if
CD took
over.
Is that what y'all had back in those days?
Yeah.
They, okay.
Yeah. Well, the bad thing about cassettes is they fall apart real easy, but they sound like crap. So who doesn't love cassettes?
I think I upgraded it to CDs eventually. So it's terrific to have you here. And we talk a lot of Georgia football on this podcast. How big a Georgia fan would you describe yourself?
You know, I don't I don't go into a funk for more than 24 hours if the Dogs lose, but you know, it ruins my day. I've been a fan since I came to college here. I actually grew up as a Tech fan because my dad was a Tech fan, and then I came up here in, I think, when was Sonny Collins at Kentucky? I came up here in maybe 73 or something like that. Anyway, I came up here. It was Georgia, Kentucky. Georgia got walloped 33-0, but Prince Charles was here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And these guys unfurled a banner in the end zone. This is Prince Charles does it dog style. And he gave a look at that and kind of just went, okay. And I think that James Brown played the same show. I think a halftime show. James Brown did Dooley's Junkyard Dogs. And I ended up at some frat house where they, you know, they gave me a drink. Let's just put it that way. So and I said, man, the hell with Tech. I like Georgia. So I came here and went to college and, of course, became a football fan pretty quickly.
So I know you grew up in Macon. How many games do you think you go to now?
I have season tickets with my uncle, so we go, you know, I probably go to 2 to 4 a year. Just depends on if I'm in town, you know, if the weather's really stinky, I won't go, but because it's on TV.
Yeah.
Were you there last week or going this week? Or?
I was at Vandy. Oh, okay. I wasn't at Murray State, but I was at Vandy. My uncle and I took a road trip up there, and, you know, that was amazing. I mean, the stadium, I guessed it was about 75% Georgia, and that's about what it was. I mean, there were no Vandy people there, and they were all gone by the start of the third quarter. So it was kind of a singular experience, but yeah, I was there.
Being a big Georgia fan, I guess you were. Was there ever a time where y'all were on tour and you know, you had to watch a game somewhere, you had to go to a bar, or you had to catch it in the you know, the room in the backstage or anything?
That has often been the case. You know, when I travel a lot, so I'll go to a bar in, you know, Seattle or some weird place, and I'm like, can you get the Georgia game on there? Like, what are you talking about? This is Washington. I said, I don't care. It's probably on TV because they're better than you are, so you might as well just, you know. So, no, people go to sports bars. They'll dial that sort of thing up for you. And I do that a lot.
That's cool.
I remember, I guess, the Liberty Bowl game. I kind of knew your true fanhood, maybe. You were not shy about tweeting out your displeasure, so to speak, in Jim Chaney's play calling. So I imagine maybe you didn't mind him leaving for Tennessee. What do you think of Jake Fromm and DeAndre Swift in this offense now under James Coley?
I think they look great. You know, obviously, the test is yet to come, but and that's good. You know, I think they'll continue to mesh and get better. Jake's amazing. I you know, what a tough choice Kirby Smart had, because look at Fields at Ohio State and what he's doing. I mean, obviously the talent was there, but again, if you go with the "if it ain't broke, don't fix it" thing, I mean, Jake's amazing. So it would be really funny if we ran into them in the postseason. But yeah, DeAndre's amazing. He's the kind of runner that we like here, and I'm just excited about the year.
You mentioned Kirby. I mean, obviously, what's your thoughts on what he's done since he's taken over the program, recruiting wise, everything?
You know, I was very much on board with Kirby from the beginning. I was really hoping that he didn't get poached away. And I'm glad it's not my job to hire coaches. But on the other hand, I thought that he was the man. I thought he was exactly the right guy coming out of the right program. You know, he'd learned how to coach the right way from Mr. Satan himself. And, you know, I was really, really glad that he came in, and he hasn't disappointed.
I don't know if you saw, the SEC Network just had their fifth anniversary, and they had like an hour and a half special, 2 hours, something like that. They used Begin the Begin for a cool highlight package at the start of the show, which had, like, you know, all sports, but football in particular as well. Did you ever see that? Did you hear about it?
I did not. I love it, though. You know, our stuff pops up now and again. You know, sometimes the networks will run it on some bumper, and that always makes me happy. But, you know, I'm glad they like it.
Speaking of sticking with music, I guess, the 40 Watt, famous place, I guess it's in about its fifth location now than from what it originally.
That sounds about right. I guess if you add the original apartment where Paul Scales and Curtis Crowe lived, which is how it got its name. Do you know about that?
I've heard about that.
Had one swinging light bulb in there, and it was a 40 Watt bulb, and that was not an official club. It was just where they lived kind of illegally. And then, so I guess after that there was... over where Starbucks is now, then there was where the Caledonia is now, then there was the old Gus Garcia's, which is something else now, And then now it's in the, it's the place where it's been forever.
I think I read that the original place, they had to you know, make the floor sturdier or something because of the, all the dancing above the...
Well, I tell you, they didn't make it sturdier, but it used to scare the hell out of me. I mean, you could see the windows bowing out, and I mean, and if you were dancing, you didn't have to work real hard because the floor bounced you up and down. It was some serious fun had there at the old 41.
Well, I know, you know, it's thought of in the same light of Whiskey Go-Go and CBGB's. I mean, do y'all feel like y'all kind of put that on the map, the 41?
Well, we had a lot of help. Yeah. You know, first you got to give credit to Paul Scales, who's sadly no longer with us, who, you know, he did the work. He put the place there. You know, he brought the beer up from downstairs. You know, I used to sweep the floors in exchange for free beer. So, but, you know, you had the Method Actors and Pylon and you know, Love Tractor and so many great bands. Just making the scene what it was. And you had, you know, at that time in the early, very early 80s here, you just had a really tight-knit group of people who all liked the same music, and there just was really nowhere to go to see it except for Tyrone's, where Mike Hobbs was smart enough to see this coming and started booking bands in there, and then the 40 Watt Club, and that was really the only places we had, so that's where we went.
Our little origin story, Michael Stipe, Peter Buck, Bill Berry, yourself studying at Georgia in 1980 at the university. That changed, though, right? You guys had some other things in mind?
Well, I started January 3rd, 1979. That was my first, okay. And I think probably all of us right around then. Yeah, I mean, I went for 2 years. I hadn't declared a major. I was in another little band here called Crossfire. We played in the Myers Hall dorm parties. But yeah, I mean, it was... it was pretty clear once I got kicked out of the honors program those were the only classes I enjoyed. And once my GPA fell to the point where they threw me out of there, I said, well, I might as well go do something else.
Of course, y'all had a great run. I guess it's been about 8 years now since y'all officially called it.
Well, no, it's, has it been? I guess you're right. 2011, yeah.
What have those 8 years been like for you, and what have you been up to, I guess?
Well, you know, it took me about a year to figure out who I was, you know, not to be too heavy, but really, I mean, when you've been doing something for 30 plus years, all of a sudden you're not doing that anymore. It's like, okay, who am I now that I'm not Mike Mills of REM on the road and in the studio? So I think we all took a little time to reflect on that and figure out who we were and where we were going. And then I said, well, I'm semi-retired. And then all of a sudden I seem to be busier than I ever was before, and it's kind of driving me crazy, but it's good. I mean, it's you get to pick and choose the projects you want and have a lot of fun. I get to play with my dear friends in the Minus Five, Scott McCoy's band, and then the Baseball Project, which is Scott McCoy, Steve Wynn, and Linda Pittman, where we write and sing all songs about baseball.
That's cool.
And so, yeah, so I have a really good time doing this stuff.
I mentioned to Josh Brooks, who's a senior athletic administrator at Georgia, that you might be on the podcast, and he helped bring Jason Aldean and some country artists to Sanford Stadium in 2014, so he wanted me to float the idea of you and REM getting back together, playing the stadium, and I told him, you know, I didn't think so, maybe, but...
No, it's, you know, at this point, we're not going to get back together. We want to be the one band that means it when they break up and say they're not getting back together. Now, you know, anything can happen, you know, lightning can hit you or meteors can fall on your head. But at this point, no, we're happy doing what we're doing.
Also, I read that Michael said his favorite REM album was New Adventures in Hi-Fi. Have you ever identified that album for you?
You know, that's a strange record. It was made on the road. Most of it was literally recorded at sound checks or somewhere while we were touring for Monster, which is, by the way, coming out as a reissue in a month or so.
Cool.
Yeah, so that's a weird record for me. Not my favorite, but then again, I don't listen to our stuff for pleasure. You know, it's, I mean, every once in a while, if I have a few drinks, I'll go home and put on some headphones and give it a listen. But generally, it's not something, because I dissect it, I go, ah, see, you could have done that better, or damn, I wish I hadn't let him do that there, or, you know, so it becomes more work than just pleasure. But I've always thought that Murmur and Automatic for the People were our most successful in terms of cohesion, top to bottom, start to finish, achieving what we kind of meant to achieve. I think those hold together better than any others, but that's not to say that my opinion means anything, because I didn't make them. You know, we make the records and then you turn them loose and then they're who they belong to everybody.
I wanted to ask you about Automatic for the People. I guess we're right down the road from it. The top, you know, the bottom of the hill over here is Weaver D's. Whose idea was it to come up with that?
Gosh, that's a good question. I can't remember. I don't remember who thought it up, but, you know, we all loved it. I mean, Weaver D's a great guy and such a great slogan. Cool. And, yeah, that's. I wish I did know who came up with that idea first. But it was one of those things that, that we all agreed on. It's just like Life's Rich Pageant. We were all watching A Shot in the Dark, which is the Peter Sellers Clouseau movie. And he had fallen into the water, and he was talking to Elkie Summer, and he's just dripping wet. And she says, oh, you'll catch your death of cold. He goes, it's all part of Life's Rich Pageant. And we all said, that's the record. That's the one. So sometimes you know them and sometimes you don't.
Let's talk about your latest project, I guess, composed concerto for rock band and string orchestra.
Yeah, rock band, violin, and string orchestra. My dear friend Bobby McDuffie, known professionally mm-hmm. as Robert McDuffie, we were good friends back in Macon. He was a prodigy violinist, and you know he went off to Juilliard. And he came to me about 5 years ago, and he says, Mike, he says, I'm tired of playing the same music by dead white European males. I want to do something different while I still can. So he asked me if I'd write this concerto, and I said, you're crazy. Why would I do that? And as I thought about it, I said, sure, I'll give it a shot. So I wrote this thing. It's basically what we're trying to do is to break down the walls between classical and rock and roll. We're trying to show people that you can like both at the same time. And so what this does is basically, you know, it's called a concerto because it's a half hour long, it's an instrumental, and it features the virtuosity of the soloist, which is Bobby. But really, it's kind of a song suite of six songs that just go together. And, you know, one of them is Night Swimming. Bobby insisted that Night Swimming be a part of it. So it's this really cool... It's a high-energy thing. I mean, it's exciting. It's got rock and roll in it. It's not a stodgy classical piece. In fact, we say before it, we tell the audience, look, this is not a classical piece. You do not have to sit on your hands. You can yell or clap or whistle or whatever you want to do. So we did that, and that's been pretty successful. And so we wanted to tour it in places maybe not traditionally classical venues. So we said, okay, how do we do that? We have to add something to it to make it more of an event than just a half-hour piece. So we said, well, we love Georgia. It's got great music. It's got great musicians. Why don't we make the first part an evening of Georgia music? So I put together all these songs that are either by Georgia artists or about Georgia, sometimes both. In the case of Gladys Knight, who's mm-hmm. from Atlanta and sings, you know, Midnight Train to Georgia. And then we said, okay, well, we need another instrumentalist to flesh out this first part of the concert. Who can we get? Who's a good piano player? And, oh, wait, here's somebody from Georgia who's the best piano player I know, and he's just a monster and a great guy. So we got Chuck Lavelle in on the first part. So the first hour or so is going to be songs about Georgia or by Georgia artists, and then following that will be the concerto.
I guess some songs, but Ray Charles, Greg Allman, Outkast, all that stuff.
We got all of those.
Outkast, that'll be interesting, right?
Oh, it sounds great. It's amazing. We got Hey Ya in there, and I was like, okay, we'll just see if this works. But it sounds really cool because Bobby is a very expressive violinist, and so it's like having a voice. It's just that there are no words. And then when you throw Chuck in there on that, it's going to be just a lot of really serious playing. And then we've got the rock band. You know, we've got John Neff, William Tonks on guitar from Athens. And Patrick Ferguson on drums from Athens, and so we got a rock band going. So it definitely rocks. And then you got the beautiful string orchestra with great arrangements by my friend David Malamud. So it's just this really encompassing thing of music. That's really what it is music. It's got rock and roll. It's got classical. It's got emotion, and it rocks. So that's what we're doing.
That's pretty cool.
Sunday, September 29th at Atlanta Symphony Hall will be Night of Georgia Music, and then also Nashville September 30th. Birmingham.
No, that's Nashville's. That's Nashville's out.
Oh,
the
okay.
only ones left. We got Birmingham on the 2nd.
Okay.
Savannah on the 4th of October.
Augusta.
And Augusta on the 5th of October. We had to cut it down to 4 because you know people don't know what to make of this. It's a brand new thing that no one really. You know, they're just a little nervous about it. So we're just going to do this mini tour and try to introduce it to people and show them how much fun it can be.
Okay, it's a nightofgeorgiamusic.com for tickets. So go ahead and scoop that up if you're in Atlanta or some of those other areas. And you mentioned Night Swimming. What other REM songs? Any others in there?
Night Swimming will be as part of the concerto. In the opening thing, we're probably going to do Losing My Religion and maybe Man on the Moon. We haven't quite made that final cut yet.
You also play, you mentioned the Baseball Project, whose members include Peter Buck of REM. I think you did a concert around a Braves game this year at the Roxy.
Yeah, yeah. Valina Vigo helped set that up. And it was really fun. We got like 800 people or 600 people in there. And, you know, when you've got a built-in baseball audience like that, it's really fun to play because they understand the songs. They don't mind that there are a lot of statistics in there and stories that, but they're stories that they have heard, you know, stories that they can relate to. So that was super fun.
So the Braves are rolling, I guess. Are you ready for postseason?
I am. I'm hoping I'm here. We have, like I said, that monster reissue, so I have to go do a lot of press overseas for that for a couple of weeks in October, so I'll probably miss some of the playoffs, unfortunately, but the Braves look good. I love it. Nobody's talking about them. Everybody's talking about the Astros and the Yankees and the Dodgers, and, you know, the Braves just might sneak in there.
Are there any Georgia football references anywhere in your catalog?
I doubt it. Michael Moat wrote most of the lyrics, and he's not, you know, he's not a big football. He's not a sports type guy.
Yes.
You know, photography and sculpture and that sort of thing. So, no, I don't think we snuck any Bulldog references in there, but, you know, they're never far from my mind.
I was going to ask you about it. You have a lot of fantasy football teams? Are you a big fantasy football?
I'm afraid so. I'm almost embarrassed to admit it, but yeah, I've got... let's see, 4, 5. I've probably got 7 fantasy football teams.
How do you keep up with it all? I mean,
you know, it's not that hard. Oh, I mean, man. It's like you pick the players you think are good, and you try to get them as many of, on as many of your teams as you can. So you've got to, you know, you can look at one guy and he'll cover 5 of your teams. But I really enjoy it. It's just something I like studying the stats and trying to put the right lineup together. And you know, sometimes I do good, sometimes not.
I think that's all those.
All right, again, it's a night of georgiamusic.com for tickets to see Mike and company, and we really appreciate you stopping by the little podcast studio here in Athens.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right, great to be with you. All right, it was great to have Mike Mills with us on the podcast.
That was awesome. That was really cool.
And I know Ryan, big music guy. I've already suggested he's a big Dave Matthews Band fan, if I haven't mentioned that.
Yeah, it's been noted on this podcast, yes.
And I think Dave Matthews has ties to Charlottesville, Virginia, does he not?
That is correct, where the band was formed and all.
Yeah. All right.
And
so
a lot of them still live there.
Who's Georgia opening next season with?
Yeah. Think we can get Dave on? Is that possible?
Well, I don't think he's coming in studio. But could we get him on the phone? I don't know. You know his deal more. Is he a media friendly guy?
I hate to say it, but I don't think that they're any of them are big sports fans. I know. Well, the drummer Carter. He wears jerseys all the time. I've seen him with Ohio State jerseys and stuff before. Maybe we get the drummer on. But I don't know if anybody could top Mike Mills, even as big a Dave fan as I am. Mike Mills in studio talking Georgia football and REM was quite incredible. So I hope y'all enjoyed it, and maybe we'll get somebody like that on next year before Virginia. We'll see.
All right, come down. I think I failed to mention, but be sure to bookmark GeorgiaFloridaRadio.com for Georgia Florida Week as we launch a 24-hour, 7-day-long pop-up radio station celebrating this historic rivalry. And we'll go live on October 26th in preparation for the November 2nd showdown.
That's true. That'll be an exciting week right there. And also... if you're not listening to us on your Apple podcast or wherever you listen, please subscribe to the podcast and give us a rating. It would be much appreciated and helpful for all of us.
All right. Let's talk a little bit more now about the over-unders. This has been very well received, at least it was week one, although I don't think I heard anything this past week, so maybe it's kind of lost its luster.
Right, keep it going.
All right, here we go, over-under. Arkansas State, they are averaging 303 passing yards per game. They're not playing UNLV this week. They're not playing SMU. They're playing Georgia. The number is 275, over or under. I will take the under.
Well, I would, too. I mean, I would be, if I was Georgia.
Murray State almost had 275.
Did they? Yeah. Well,
they might have had more.
I think I'd still be disappointed if I was Georgia and I gave up 303 or more passing yards to any inferior opponent.
Well, what if you give up 305 passing yards and you give up 15 rushing yards?
Well, I guess take the good with the bad, but I'd go under, and I'm going to go way under. I'm going to go, what do you think about 275 or so, you believe?
I just said under. I didn't say it. It could be 274.
Okay. Oh, could be. I'll go much under that, too. I'll say no more than 225.
All right, DeAndre Swift, 6 carries against Murray State. Over-under this week is 8, and I am going over at 9.
Yeah, that sounds like a good number.
There's a big game next week.
That is true.
Zamir White's on the team. Brian Herrien.
Yeah, exactly.
James Cook.
Exactly. And, I mean, they used Kenny McIntosh a good bit last year.
Yeah, I don't know if that's happening this week.
Got later in the game.
Well, it'll happen if it's a blowout.
That's what I'm saying. I guess it's a thing they'll have to monitor. And if it's a blowout like last week, then they'll probably say, all right, Swifty, get ready for the fighting Irish.
All right, Eli Wolf, what did you say? You said over, under? The number was 8.
Gosh, that sounds... I'll go under.
All right, Eli...
7. 7.
Eli Wolf, 4 catches for 73 yards last week. Over-under is 3 this week. How many does he get? I say 2.
Yeah, I'll go under. And I don't even know if we'll get to that. I don't know why he was the target last week, but I'll just say under.
All right, 6 sacks last game. Over-under this week is 2. Arkansas State giving up 2 this season. I will say over. I'll say Georgia will have 4.
Yeah, I'd say after last week, it'd be disappointing if they didn't put at least 2 on the board or more. So, yeah, I'll go over. I think Arkansas State kind of has the same type of offense maybe as Murray. Didn't they say they were trying to do something a little different to be the aggressors and not let an offense like that dictate the pace of play? So, I guess I'll go more, yeah.
All right, Julian Rochester snaps. The number is 1. He has not played yet this season. He's been dressed out for both games. I will say under.
Yeah, something ain't right there, is it? I mean, what are they doing with that guy?
I think we talked about this, didn't we? I'm saying it's the redshirt possibility.
Yeah, I think you're right.
This is based on nothing but conjecture.
4 games, though, right? So you'd figure this might be one of them. No, but I'll say under. I think they just might hold him out the whole year. ACL, right? And now he's coming off of?
He's coming off an ACL.
So I think they might just be precautionary and not even play him all year.
All right, let's now get to our weekly picks. If you guys think of any good names to call the contest, we're taking suggestions. I'm thinking maybe like, gridiron.
Guesses?
Guesses, yeah, that's good. So that might go.
No, we'll stick with Wiser and Wiser.
I don't know where that came from.
Keep it going.
All right, congratulations first to Ed Simeon, and I might be mispronouncing that.
Looks good.
Out of Athens, very good score, 11 out of 12 last week.
He's killing us, man. He's definitely wiser than Dennis.
I did well first week, not as well this past week. All right, here we go. Washington State is at Houston, and this is two offensive minds coaching these teams. You got West Virginia former coach, and then you got the Pirate for Washington State. I'm going... with Wazoo.
Yeah, Washington State was impressive last week, and they, you know, the way they throw the ball around, I'll stick with them as well.
All right, Air Force of Colorado, Mel Tucker 2-0, but the Service Academy comes to Boulder. I don't know much about Air Force in terms of, you know, I haven't been to that town. I would just guess that you have different cultures in Boulder, Colorado versus the other side of the state with Air Force. I'm just saying
legal stuff. Yeah, go ahead.
You know what? It's always tough when you're coming off a big win like Colorado did. I think it was a comeback win over Nebraska. And I'm going to take Air Force. I think they're only a couple 3-point underdog maybe. I'm taking Air Force pulling the mini upset.
No, I stuck with Colorado. I don't know why. It just feels like Mel Tucker has them going strong out there. I stuck with them.
All right. I was thinking about this. If Pruitt, kind of gets
the boot,
and Tucker has that thing cranking up in Colorado and an SEC job opens, ooh, there's no way that they can hire another former Saban assistant at Tennessee, can they?
Yeah, you wouldn't think so. So you're saying Mel Tucker's at the top of the list, maybe?
No, I'm saying he can't. He wouldn't be. Because of it would be a hard sell, I think.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I don't know. Yeah.
All right. Right. Don't worry about it. Yeah. Southern Cal's at BYU, and BYU coming off a win at Tennessee. Southern Cal, I think they snuck into the top 25 this week. I had them, I think, at maybe 25 on my ballot. I'm going for the Trojans to keep it rolling. I think BYU's going to have a letdown after that Tennessee win.
Yeah, I thought about the letdown, but I also feel like Southern Cal still, they're going the rest of the year with their backup quarterback. I think part of the reason they won.
He did well, though.
But I think part of the reason they won was called Stanford's backup quarterback. I stuck with BYU. I think playing at home in, Provo? Does that sound right?
Yep.
No, that might be they're going to stick with it.
All right. Well, we got to do this a little faster run.
Pick it up. Rapid fire.
Kansas State is at Mississippi State. K-State, I believe, is 2-0. I looked up their stuff earlier in the week. I'm gonna go with them. They've had a good start to the season, and I'm not really sold yet on Mississippi State.
Nah, I took Mississippi State.
Okay, do you have a reason why?
No, I'm rapid firing. Here we go.
NC State's at West Virginia. West Virginia kind of flatlining this year, losing at Missouri. I'm going for NC State.
Yeah, I picked NC State as well. I don't think West Virginia's all that great.
All right, Maryland's at Temple. Obviously, we know Maryland's been rolling this season. They are in the top 25 this week.
You had them at like 15 in your...
I think I had them at 23 maybe.
Oh, there you go.
Temple had a big win last week, against not much of an opponent, I believe. That's the only game they played, I believe, so far. I'm not sure exactly what you're getting from Temple yet this year, but I'm going to say Roll Terps.
I'm sure you wouldn't. Yeah, I picked Maryland, too. They impressive those first two games and just clobbered ranked Syracuse. So, yeah, keep them rolling.
Stanford at UCF. Interesting matchup. Stanford hadn't necessarily started the season, incredible. And UCF, you figure they'd be due for a loss at home, but I'm sticking with UCF.
Yeah, UCF. Is that a return trip? Did UCF go out there last year?
I don't know.
That's an odd scheduling, if you ask me. But yeah, I go with UCF at home.
All right, Alabama is at South Carolina. Gamecocks beat up on Charleston Southern. What, they put up 70-something?
Yeah.
Yeah, doesn't matter. Bama.
Yeah, this wasn't even a tough decision. I just went ahead and clicked Alabama on the onlineathens.com/contest page where you can do the voting for this.
You might hear a lot about the fact that South Carolina beat Bama in 2010 in Columbia, but that's 9 years ago. And yeah, all right. Colorado State is at Arkansas. Mike Bobo is bringing his squad to Fayetteville, and I am not buying Colorado State in this one. I think Arkansas is very hungry for a win, and they're going to get it against Bobo, unfortunately, for the former Georgia assistant.
Yeah, I wasn't confident about this one. I went with Arkansas as well, but I mean, it's not going to shock me if Colorado State comes in and pulls the upset, just because I don't have that much confidence in Arkansas, but I didn't have that much confidence in Colorado State either, so that's why I guess I stuck with Arkansas.
Clemson's at Syracuse.
That's been a challenge, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, when you're going all the way from Clemson, South Carolina. I mean, if you're driving there, you probably got to go through Easley, through Gaffney. It's a long way to upstate New York.
Two stops along the way right there next to each other.
Well, you do get to see that orange, the peach, in Gaffney. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Right there. What is that? Is that 85?
Yeah, 85.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This time it's not happening. Syracuse beat them, or they just scared them a couple years ago? I can't remember. They might have beat them. I think up there.
I know last year Chase Bryce had to come in and save them.
Give me the Tigers. Syracuse, by the way, I mentioned Maryland. They were terrible last week.
Yeah, I took Clemson as well. I mean, why not? I mean, they're number one team. Where do you think Clemson flies out of? Do they fly out of Clemson?
Greenville, Spartanburg.
You think so? Yeah, that's right. That's probably.
I mean, unless that makes sense. Unless they don't want to drive 45 minutes or an hour or whatever it is.
I was thinking Charlotte for some reason. Yeah, that's a pretty big airport.
Charlotte?
There. I don't know. I was trying to think.
It's Greenville, Spartanburg International.
There you go.
There's the BMW plant right there.
Oh, I've seen it. Yeah.
So there's a lot of actual international flights.
There you go.
From Germany.
Yeah.
All the parts suppliers. All right. Let's see what we're talking about. All right, two more games. Let's do Florida, Kentucky before we do Georgia. Three more games because that's the one. The last one's the one we picked to score. Hey, Kentucky ended that long losing streak to Florida last year, right?
Yes, 30 years, 29 years,
right,
something like that.
Florida starts a new streak. Kentucky loses their starting quarterback last week, and I think the Gators go to Lexington and win.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how they do against somebody that is not FCS, I believe they played last week. Towson, is that who they played?
Oh, they played Miami already.
Right, that's what I'm saying. But everybody, talked to how bad they looked in that game.
Yeah.
But I guess it'll be interesting to see. But yeah, it's going to be tough for Kentucky with their top quarterback out for the year.
All right, Arkansas State comes to town to play Georgia. It was 32-ish, 33 points earlier in the week. I hadn't looked the last couple of days.
I haven't looked.
Georgia fans are doing a nice thing with Blake Anderson coming to town, the Arkansas State coach, asking folks to wear pink ribbons. He lost his wife, sadly, a couple weeks ago. Returned to the team. She had breast cancer. Returned to the team last Saturday. Surprised them by showing up to their pregame meeting at the hotel. they've had a decent non-conference schedule in that you played SMU, you played UNLV. I mean, they hadn't played like an FCS team or something like that. But they're not going to – it's going to be kind of like the Alabama game last year was, I'm thinking. It was 57-7 they lost. They went to Tuscaloosa. I mean, I don't know necessarily they're going to lose by 50 points, but I think Georgia's going to keep going. I mean, besides that first quarter, they've been on point. I mean, I guess the offense kind of shut down at Vandy in terms of scoring touchdowns. But I think the noon start's going to be interesting. I think there's not going to be any buzz really in that stadium. I mean, because you don't have a dually dedication or something like that. But
right, might be a late arriving crowd or a non arriving crowd. Well, I think it's 96 degrees.
Yeah, I think people still show up. Hey, they got some good a quarterback that's averaging 300 yards a game. They got a receiver that's top five in the nation, or actually tied for tops in the nation with five touchdowns. But Georgia's got way too much talent, and Bulldogs win. Actually, on this thing, we don't have to do this point spread. So, hey, Georgia wins. I pick them.
I think you covered it all. Give me the Dogs.
All right. Last one is Iowa at Iowa State, and this is, I think, the ESPN Game Day crew. By the way, David Pollack did a nice video online. There was a somebody that was sick that he, reached out to on video and you know, said, we're all fighting with you, we're all with you as you fight your battle. But he also revealed on that nice video that, you know, basically that he's expecting Game Day to be in Athens next week, which of course we all are. I haven't actually looked to see what all the other schedule is.
Yeah,
but
I think that's been the rumor or thought process, I guess.
Anyway, my point is Game Day's there. Iowa State's only played one game. I think they're coming off an off week. Give me Iowa, 28-23 in Ames. Is it Ames? It is Ames.
Sounds right. I went the opposite direction. I think for some reason, I don't know why, Iowa State's going to win easily. I think I had it 31-20. Iowa State winning that one. So I guess we'll see who's wiser than wiser after this week's games, and that'll be the big one. We'll keep an eye on that. Do you know what time that game is? Is it a 3:30 start?
Jeez. Now I'm on the TV listings. I have no idea.
Hey, check the game day section on Saturday.
Check your local listings.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, that's it for the podcast. Next week we will. I think we're only doing two. I mean, I know it's Notre Dame week, but I don't think we're doing five or anything.
I hope not.
Thanks for listening to this Bulldog Extra podcast from Athens Banner Herald. Drop us a line at mweiser@onlineathens.com or rdennis@onlineathens.com. You know my Twitter handle, Mark Weiser. You know the spelling, I'm sure.
Yep.
Ryan, what are you at?
RhinoDennis19, on the old Twitter handle.
All right, Bulldogs Extra podcast is presented each week by Zaxby's. Cure your cravings. Stop in today or visit zaxbys.com.